Hello, my name is Rob Hirschfeld, CEO and co-founder of RackN, and this is the Cloud 2030 podcast with a continuation of our technical operations series. In this episode, we are talking about system processes, specifically system D, but how do you manage and control processes, services, fundamental components of Linux operating systems? And in this discussion, we actually go very deep into how to think about it, how it works. We talk about alternatives, process controls, even how they get applied to containers. As a matter of fact, we started with containers, which is a nice bridge from our previous discussions where we're talking about container management systems. And then deep into systemd. If you were interested in Linux, Linux management, Linux automation, this is a good episode for you. Enjoy it. Did you play with the container? It was Rocket that was supposed to be a systemd managed container system. And I was like, I kept expecting it to get more popular than it is. And I'm a little surprised that we're not using. Go ahead.
Rocket was deprecated at one point.
Okay.
And as far as the systemd integrated container systems, systemd and spawnd is what replaced it. It's just that, for the most part, there hasn't been much traction or demand to run containers from systemd. As far as standalone container runtimes, Docker is still the most popular.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily the best, but the most popular. And then if you run Kubernetes, typically you use whatever your
the subsystems
distribution gives you.
Yeah. Well, did Docker pretty much split? Like, I know that with the way the open source pieces worked, you ended up with Containerd as a subsystem for whatever the Docker or Podman was.
Yeah.
And then from that perspective, Docker became more of a UX for the container interface, is the way I usually thought of it. Is that a
sort of, yeah.
Okay.
If you install Docker, Containerd is still bundled with it. So
if you're using the kubectl, it really is not Docker, it's using Containerd, right? Behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, in some cases, it could be another runtime. Could be Creo.
This is what's sort of weird, right? If containers had been done as a first class citizen from the start, then it would just be an OS feature, an OS capability, and you'd have different ways to interface to it.
If you want an OS capable of running containers, that's FreeBSD with jails.
Mm-hmm.
There are some OSs who try to make containers a first class citizen. or at least containerized approaches. I don't think it's quite at the kernel level yet, but we might see that in the future.
That's okay. It would make sense to me considering the way we're treating it, and BSD and Solaris too, because we were zones. I had early exposure because we were doing zones in Solaris there was a product by Joyent that was entirely based on zones.
To be fair, I am personally on the side of microkernels, so I'm happy that it's not been brought into the kernel itself. And I don't think it will ever happen in Linux. It's just too much to put into the kernel. But
Would okay.
I can see perhaps purpose-built kernels being produced or developed for essentially running containers as close to bare metal as you can. But ultimately, you still, at least with modern container systems, you're still relying on C groups, on kernel features that are part of the Linux space.
All right. I actually, we're crossing into one of those things that I would love to have explained, because I use and say C groups with a degree of confidence, but I'm not sure that I'm actually comfortable in what C groups are. How would you describe a C group?
C groups are I would consider it as a process sandboxing feature. It just happens that it ended up being really, really useful for doing it at a scope that is not just a process but a collection of processes. So like essentially a process and a stream. And that's essentially what a container is. Like it's just a process that the kernel starts and you except that in the scope of the process, that process is PID one and its children are subsequent PIDs. I mean it's I see it as an evolution of what was it called? Trut,
Oh,
which
that's why it's C groups. Okay.
it
As
might be.
opposed to P
I don't
groups.
know the
Just
etymology of the name.
curious.
The C stands for control in C groups.
Okay. Control groups. Got it.
And that's exactly what they are, is they allow you to specify, you get this much CPU, you get this much memory, and then, as Klaus said, right, they're all child processes of that, PID one.
Gotcha. In
And at least when
your C
implemented as
group. Okay.
at least when implemented as intended, the processors are also not supposed to be able to see anything outside of their sandbox. So they're essentially pretending to be PID1, and they're isolated from the other processes.
And that's different than virtualization, because they're still running on the at the same kernel.
Yes.
Is we're back to the kernel. The kernel being it's a PID one, but the kernel's the same regardless. Okay.
Yeah. So it means that the kernel takes care of memory management, so you can bin pack your processes much more tightly. And it also means that you don't have the admittedly minimal now overhead of doing any of the hardware translations. And again, I admit it's minimal now, but like with BTX and BTD, that's almost native. The downside again is you share the same kernel. So if you try to run processes that require a different kernel, then you are virtualizing.
Right, that would be the and well, virtualization would give you even a stronger boundary from a hardware isolation perspective. Right.
Yes,
So.
for the most part. I think that there are some new features that are being worked on in the scope of conventional computing that give you the same kind of strong guarantees in a container scope. But yes, Like, assuming everything else being equal, VMs give you a simpler to prove isolation.
Okay. So, and this comes back to the thing. If you're just doing C groups, or just doing C groups, if you're doing C groups from a container isolation perspective, is that really that different than just starting different processes on in the OS? I mean, I guess there's a file system piece under that also from a container perspective.
From a performance perspective, no.
Okay.
From an isolation perspective, yes. Again, like as I said, the C groups, because the process in a C groups runs in a sandbox, everything else on the host is invisible to it.
So, and this is where where we were going to go with this was with towards system D and sort of process control and management. I guess one of the reasons why it's not as simple when you look at running services in the OS, if they were all sandbox, then they couldn't actually be services, or could they? Does that end up being a problem?
They could be, but you will then need to have stronger guarantees on the host that the processes are not able to interfere with each other. And for example, if you've ever tried to let's say to write new system D policies, sorry, not system D, let's say Linux policies,
Okay.
that's a real pain in the butt. Pardon my French. But
Yes.
so being able to do that easily in a container environment, I'm being able to say, if I run this process with these specific settings, then it cannot escape its sandbox, or at least as long as the kernel implementation is correct, it cannot escape its sandbox. That is a very powerful thing, because then you can start running multi-tenant workloads on the same kernel.
So I guess multi-tenant workloads would, all right, I was going to pull us in the other direction back towards system D. And we, if it's all right, come back to multi-tenant. Because right, this there was a they're saying and Greg, I there was something you said ages ago when system D was coming out, and at the time, this way back in the early rack end days, every Linux distro had its own system manager, and you would stop and start system services differently depending on what Linux you were on. And then system D showed up, and everybody was still is angry about system D.
That's because Upstart tried to replace SysV init, and then Red Hat came out with System D, which was basically their answer to Upstart. And
Okay.
while Upstart had problems, I feel like it was significantly better than System D in that it didn't try and control the whole system, right? And I think the biggest complaint I hear about System D is that it violates the kind of primary idiom of Linux in that, do one thing and do it well, whereas System D tries to do everything all at once everywhere, you know.
Except that's just not quite true, because I mean, systemd these days is a family of products. There's systemd init, which the init system. There's the systemd component that manages file systems. There's a systemd component that manages user sessions. Systemd and spawned for containers. And so on. So it is still modularized. It just
But
happens to be under the systemd umbrella and using the systemd APIs.
that's kind of my point, isn't it? Is that It does all of these. Yeah, you can call it modularized, but it's one big system. And like, things like turning simple text logs into a binary format that you can no longer parse with a simple text reader. I mean, these all kind of coalesce into this one big blob of a thing that now controls the whole system, and you really can't extract these different components. It's not like you can replace system D in it with something and then still continue to use the other modular bits of system D. They're all kind of intertwined and interlocked.
To some degree, I mean, yes, you if you're gonna replace system D in it, then the other components or the other system D components around it are going to be harder to run. But the other direction is not applicable. So, for example, if you replace terminal D with, let's say, RSS login G or something like that, it's still going to run. You just don't have journal control and all the other features around it. Furthermore, like I would argue that like this whole like do one thing and do it well thing, when it's flown the coop a long time ago with the Linux kernel being monolithic. Like if we're gonna complain about like one thing controlling a lot of things, all other things. I mean, the Linux kernel is not exactly innocent on that regard. But like, if we look at the history, there's a reason why these things end up being integrated, and that's performance.
But when we talk about, do one thing and do it well, we're talking about user space systems like system D. We're not talking about the kernel. The kernel's the thing that makes everything else run.
Bottom line is
So
like,
let's, yeah, go ahead.
yeah, like
No,
it.
go, sorry.
I'll let you go first.
I was just going to say, I mean, I think, we're starting from a point of knowledge that I was going to step back from a second. Just right, I think, the basic idea that, the operating system has a kernel, and then there's a whole bunch of services that get run on top of it, and then, the operating system isn't actually working until these services are started. And then the services have a life cycle. They have to be maintained. They have to be configured and set up. Hopefully, most people using the operating system know that, but I don't think a lot of people really think through this idea. It's like, wait a second, I can't, even access a disk or a device without interacting with system D and doing some configuration. And that, I think it's very confusing. I know it's confusing to me when I'm like bouncing my way through Linux and trying to make something work or not work. And a lot of times I'm interacting with a service, and I don't even realize I'm interacting with a service because I have a CLI for it. But there's, system D pulled a lot of the things that used to be like handled as all these different spot instances into a at least a consistent place. And that's
I mean,
that
everything
was
was
again.
in the init directory with sysv init.
Well, not everything though. I mean, with sysv init, yes, you would start services in the init directory, but you had real problems. Like, for example, if you had a service that needed to wait for a certain volume to be mounted before it was even usable, you had no primitives to do that. You essentially had to do like a retry loop to see, okay, I'm this the system ready now. Similarly, like with things like ephemeral home directories or encrypted home directories, you were running into race conditions there. Like these are real things that systemd has solved. It has solved them by integrating these various services. But from a ecosystem perspective, I see that integration as having been necessary. That doesn't mean that systemd is irreplaceable. Like there's plenty
Okay.
of distros that have decided, okay, I'm not gonna run systemd at all. I'm gonna use UbernRC or stick with sys5 in it, and then continue doing things like in a decoupled way. It just happens to be that systemd has provided a practical enough ecosystem that is being widely adopted. I would draw a parallel between this and, let's say, Kubernetes. Like, you don't need Kubernetes to run containers. You don't even need Kubernetes to do container orchestration. There's plenty of alternatives. It just happens to be popular because it gives you all of the tools that you need for the most of the use cases. And it's been widely adopted enough that it has plenty of support and documentation.
Oh. Would I hadn't even thought about it. I mean, the way I always have seen and heard it is basically systemd is the scheduler.
It tries to be the scheduler, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which
And
is
this
good. I
is,
mean,
yeah.
it was miserable. I mean, Linuxes were a nightmare. Already are a nightmare, you know, 10 years ago when before systemd came out and started to create some standardization. Right. And then it became much easier to be, you know, because now I know how to restart services consistently on every operating system. I can do a journal cuttle, which should see the log. All right. I mean, and this is, I guess, part of my question, right? How consistently should I expect to be able to, you know, look at journal cuttle and see the log output for a system or system status, system D status or system cuttle status.
As long as you have the sufficient permissions, it's pretty much guaranteed,
Okay.
which is a huge usability improvement. Because I remember the time when before that, with sys5 init, where I had to go hunting through var log and try to figure out, okay, which one of these logs is the one that actually has the information that I need.
Lucky you, only checking var log. Yeah, usually those things are all over the place, not just var log anymore.
Exactly.
Yep.
So the fact that systemd has provided a unified and consistent interface for querying all of these logs, and the fact that I can easily filter them on with good performance, that was a huge usability improvement for me as a sysadmin. Now,
Is
again,
yeah.
systemd has its faults. Like it's not perfect, but it's better than it was before.
Is there a like a something you use from a system D like to manage a set like system D trick, something that because sometimes for me it's always a surprise. Like I'll use system cuttle or journal cuttle and I'll follow a log and it's been pretty nice, but sometimes I don't get much information at all out of that. Like I can tell it's busted. And I know we have a ton of logs spew into that journal cuttle, but I don't know that it's always that helpful. And actually I have a follow-up question, which is is the expectation that that's a log basically log D, what used to be what I used to think of as log D, where you would just subscribe to log output. How is that different?
I mean, it's a mixed question. So the
Okay.
usability of what goes into logs largely depends on what logs the service emits. I mean, if the service doesn't tell you why it's being killed, or why it's failing, or so on, then the logs are not going to help you, even if they're centralized. I also wouldn't consider it necessary as equivalent to log D as you would position it. I mean, it is like, as long as the services are uniformly configured to emit their logs to journal D, and as long as and as long as the verbosity is correct, and the details are in there, yes, it's gonna help you. But I would not consider it to be the sole reference for like debugging or trying to do root cause analysis. I've been a long-standing, like many years now, supporter of the 3 pillars of observability, and logs is just one of those. Like, you still need metrics, and you still want traces, or at least an APM or some kind of debugging capability.
Well, systemd ultimately is really, at its heart, it's just a process manager, right? I mean, it's the logging that's output from a systemd is, I mean, it's process awareness. How I guess if you, and this is part of what I'm not sure of it. In systemd configs, is that where you would determine how much logging you want to get? I guess you can talk to a service and increase logging as part of just a service definition. But what you're describing to me is, all right, I have a Prometheus metrics point, which is different than what you're configuring in systemd. Is that a fair? Maybe
Yes. Yeah.
I'm okay.
Yeah. So I see systemd as a service orchestrator. And what you will get to out of the, let's say, system control status or the journal D logs is the information that you need to do orchestration tasks. But if you get to a point where your service has an unrecoverable failure or a recurring issue, whether it's performance or availability, I see that as going outside of the scope of systemd itself, or even the tools that are built around systemd.
Interesting. I think you're right from where I was going with this. Systemd is really that's really the design of the service, right? Is what we just jumped into, not the basics of I want to start and stop a service. I want to be able to do some log management of it. Should people look at systemd as more than that?
Well, right, I think in some regards, we beat up systemd for not doing enough in certain areas and doing too much in other areas. And really, all I want from systemd is a Linux-wide unified service management that will handle service restarts and a generalized logging platform. That's all I expect from it. And to me, that's the fundamental thing that's made it really useful, is that it has allowed the Linux distributions to standardize the method by which you run a service. So that it doesn't matter necessarily, especially now that Debian and Canonical kind of hopped on board reasonably, that okay, I want to run a service and I need it supervised instead of having to roll my own daemon system or whatever. I now have a fairly standardized way that this just kind of works. And I, as a provider of a service, don't care.
It's
Why?
also a bonus as a developer because it gives you a consistent interface that works across all distributions.
That's
Like
right.
if you write a systemd Unix that works on Debian or Ubuntu, you can work on Red Hat as well.
And so systemd just becomes a control. Now, could it be used to do more? Sure. People trying to stuff container monitoring services and control services into it. Oh, okay. I get it, right? And it's one of those, the countervailing thing is, okay, something like a Red Hat CoreOS or whatever it's called now, right? Or a roll your own kind of container is the basis of all interaction with the system. Okay, it's a different path, and you don't even have a service system because it's controlled by whatever you're using to start your container subset, right? It's just different. But in those environments, you're like, okay, I got a different plan, I got a different story. And so it's not the same kind of thing, right?
Right.
From
Makes
Rackin's
sense.
perspective, we like it because instead of having to support, what is it, five, six different system startup services, we now have to deal with three, right? The one in ESXi, the one in Windows, and the one in Linux. And then whatever the heck people are thinking of whenever they do roll their own CoreOS like system control system, right? And usually the appropriate answer to that is just get the heck out of the way. So
When,
from
go ahead.
system
No.
administrator operator's perspective, it's normalized the space. Now, how to normalize too, right? You may have lost function or direction or path or componentry, but that's fine, right? I mean, that's an aspect of normalizing a space. You may have lost some function you loved, but okay.
What I mean, when you so if you look at a service that is well designed for systemd or is appropriate for systemd. I mean, I'm curious about what is a good systemd service versus what's something that's not working or misfit. Does that right? I'm trying to think through like if I'm sitting down and I mean this happens to me. I'm trying to use Linux and there's some services that seem like they just operate the way I expect them to. And then
Well, part
some
of that
others.
is differentiating the service from the system. So, like John originally mentioned, one of the biggest headaches and heartaches of what people perceive as the systemd environment, but it's not really systemd at all. It's how did the underlying OS that is using systemd as its service system choose to implement its networking service, right? So you could say, hey, I want to use systemd networkd, or I want to use systemd network manager or whatever Red Hat.
This is what's super confusing.
So
It feels like it's always different than what I expect it to be.
when a systemd is a managed is a system to manage services and restart and one shot and all of those things and sequence and order and depends and all that stuff. The challenge is, okay, that did an okay job normalizing that space. But then people managing a system is more than just starting or stopping a service. It's configuring networking, it's configuring whatever, it's doing all these other things, right? And okay, we still have people choosing to roll their own on certain areas. It's like, okay, that's fine. But network
So
manager and its
files together.
binary files versus Ubuntu and its etsy, interfaces file or whatever it is versus network manager versus, right? Okay. So fine.
And then you got Netplan.
Yeah, right. This is what's confusing, right? So what
Right.
is yeah, why isn't that just all system D, like configure my network?
Well,
You're saying
it does it
there's a bunch of
now.
Linux distros.
Like, if you look up newer releases, like Ubuntu 22.04 and later, systemd, network D is the network manager. And then what is canonically known as network manager is now just a user interface for that. Before, it used to be that network manager itself would want to manage the interfaces, and systemd didn't do that. And I had horrible experiences with that.
Oh, okay. So it was a factor that System D didn't actually manage the interfaces,
Correct.
okay, I find that's.
It started a service. And depending on how your underlying system named that service, you either waited appropriately for a network service or not, right? It's still some of the heartaches around, all right, did you really do a network service system or a systemd services kind of management stuff, right? Because we still have problems with our services depending on which OS you're running on, because not everybody created normalized networking targets. So most of the time it's covered correctly, and most of the time we've rewritten our service where we don't care. But
And this is
some
particularly problematic with containerized environments like on Docker runtimes because they write their own firewall rules.
Yep.
So if you apply them in the wrong order, you can get into big trouble with systems being exposed that shouldn't really be.
Yeah.
So all right, I guess half of my problem is that I keep thinking that system D is a more universal solution than it is or than it had been. Okay.
Yeah, it's an ecosystem, and at its core, a service orchestrator.
Meaning that if I start, I can say this service has to start after this service or before this other service. I can create some dependencies in a graph.
Yeah, and this goes back to the question about what is a or an ideal, not necessarily ideal, but a good systemd service. It's one that takes advantage of the various event definitions that systemd gives you to make sure that it starts after all of its dependencies have been brought up, and it stops at the right time as well.
Makes sense. I mean, that's a big deal because I know one of the biggest challenges of starting an OS is actually getting all the events to start in the right, well, getting events in the wrong sequence is a major problem. Had been.
And as a side effect from that, you also get like automatic service restarts, and it's done by systemd itself. Like I remember the init scripts necessary to restart services and trying to code for the various edge conditions for that. It was horrible. And now it's like a 20 line file, and you're done. Do you remember having to manage PID files?
Yeah.
I do. Oh my God, yeah. No, and like we'd always have to write a PID tracker app.
I
And
said ES6i service starting.
oh, because it's an older Linux that didn't adopt any of these kernel changes.
Switch to
Okay.
system. They have their own kind of System 5-like init script system with all sorts of other crap added on top, right? Okay. And then Windows, right? They have their own service.
They've had their own service manager forever. Yeah.
I mean, it's a completely different system. I mean, it ends up starting. And see, that's why, for example, we don't necessarily try and do service integrations, right? We actually want to draw a hard line because Boss is right. You could write a C set of additional C integrations to hook into the systemd bus to catch events and stuff like that. Okay, you could, but and that could be helpful for certain services like the device manager and other stuff like that because it'll pay attention to the device bus and other things like that. But our service isn't that way. And so because we write Go stuff for the most part for this set of services, adding dependencies on C libraries for system events keeps it from being portable, especially, for example, our runner agent, which we run as a service under systemd in a lot of environments.
Oh, that's
We
true.
run it
Okay.
as a Windows service. We also run it as an ESXi. I would love to run it as ESXi service, but they don't have a Go compiler that they publish. So, okay, all those service, it would be kind of pointless for us to have these integrations into our system running, right? And so keeping a reasonable separation, which systemd allows, between your service orchestrator and your service, right, lets you actually have more separated concerns and portable code base.
So when you say they're separated, that means basically you can say, here is the binary, here's the configuration,
Yeah, the
start it and
DRP server.
keep going. Okay.
Yeah, our DRP server and our DRP runner, they don't actually know or care that they're running under a service.
Okay.
The fact that the service system keeps track of the fact that they were started, that they're paying, right? In some regards, like Docker and Podman and some of those other container management systems, it's just at a system-wide kind of arbitrary program perspective.
And then you're making a service call to the service.
And so
Okay.
another aspect of systemd, right, is, or at least our common usage of systemd, becomes a story of keeping systemd at arm's length to do what it needs to do and keep those two things separated, right? Right. We could use a lot more features, but then we become very tied to systemd and we don't need it, right? The fact that it has a feature doesn't mean you have to use it.
What would be a benefit? I'm not.
Well, so like if DRP client really cared about actively tracking device state, right?
Oh,
You could
huh.
say, hey, instead of, or services started, or things like that, it could register onto the device bus and the systemd bus and say, hey, give me events for when these things happen. I could catch those and then I could either choose to notify, drive, whatever. Okay. So that's an integration path. It's potentially quite viable and valuable. But for our usage and our patterns, we do that other ways. And we're like, eh, never mind.
So you could, with the systemd infrastructure that you have, you could watch it, assuming everybody's playing fair, which most people sounds like are at this point, most services. You could actually monitor the systemd event stream and say, oh, somebody's attached a device, somebody's removed a device, somebody's turned,
Yeah, it's part of the device subsystem, but systemd gets those events too.
Okay.
Or the systemd services can get those.
Yeah, for device attachments, typically you end up looking at dbus directly instead of
Yeah.
systemd.
But the same concept, there's a systemd bus and all of it.
And that would let you, I guess I'm trying to think through what a use case would look like from that perspective. I
Well,
guess is go ahead.
a made-up one, right, is if
Sure.
our runner actively reported the current device state to all systems, right? So it could watch dbus and say, hey, somebody just attached a USB drive. Throw that as an alert because nobody should be attaching USB drives to the system.
Oh, okay.
Right? Okay. It's a thing. It's just not a thing we choose to put in our service.
Gotcha. But if we did that and did it from a systemd perspective, it'll still be a Linux only service because it's a
Right.
systemd thing. But you would at least now have some consistency across the board. Or if somebody was stopping or starting services, I guess that's if you're
Yeah.
running a compliance check system on a right, if you're doing a governance or a compliance audit system,
You
then
could pay
you're
attention to systemd mess events and say, hey, did somebody start up a systemd service that I wasn't expecting? Okay, stop it, kill it, notify, alert. Okay. Kind of the watching the watcher problem, but.
Yeah. At least that's something I didn't think about systemd. Like, I know that you can use it to start and stop the services and pull the logs out in a consistent way. I hadn't thought about the eventing side of it from being able to say, oh, I'm actually watching the other, assuming you have privileges, watching the other services in that perspective and what's going on in the system. But that is not waiting. I mean, if you're starting to do that, then you're in some ways not letting systemd do its own orchestration. You're supervising it.
Well, there you're talking about an audit monitoring function, which, okay, that's a thing.
It's different.
Can argue the value of it, right? But
Well, I guess part of what my goal was for this session, because I think, right. I know for myself, and I'm trying to proxy for understanding systems better, is it's okay to be able to say, all right, I understand systemd enough to start or stop a service or look at its logs, but there's we're discussing now an element of like, okay, if it's these are things I could do with systemd, or these are things that are available in the system that are broader than just what services are running from that perspective. I do have a question that I always find confusing, which is where the heck should I be looking for systemd? Like, if I actually want to see how a service is configured, I mean, I know I could just say systemd status, but can I actually inspect or mess with the service configuration for systemd? I'm assuming I can. I just don't know where to look.
Etsy systemd system, I think.
And then the name of the systems, it's just that simple.
Yeah.
Sometimes, yes, except
Yeah.
for user provided systems, which are in, what's it,
Right.
user,
Systemd user.
yeah. And you can also do system control edit a system, in which case you will be giving a blank file where you can add overrides for the base file.
Oh, did
And
not.
you're
Huh.
also just seeing the files doesn't necessarily mean the service is enabled. There's also a set of symlinking that goes on behind the scenes.
Yeah,
So,
but
okay.
the other thing also is you can do a system control show and then the system name, and that will give you essentially the render configuration that it's using. And this might be more than what's in the actual file, because it also breaks in like defaults from how it systemd itself is configured.
So you could use that to actually sort of look at what the composited file inputs are from that perspective.
Yep, the
Okay.
composite inputs, as well as, again, like all of the constraints. But like, for example, like what is your like you get things like, okay, like how many bytes did this file, did this service read or write? Is like it is there are the memory limits in place? Like
Okay.
what's the UMask that the service runs at? So again, like in terms of a like a sysadmin perspective, this gives you a lot of usability that you would have to manage manually before with Sys5 in it.
So that consistency is important, in part just because it made all the system writers conform to a standard process instead of back in the day when there was could you sort of faked it, where you carved up a way and then mapped it into each operating system, which is what I think I remember doing.
Well, not just that, but it also reduces boilerplate. You don't have to write as much to get a service started. Like, again, the 20 lines is about a standard systemd unit file. And you can do a lot in those 20 lines.
We actually have ours like five or six or seven, and then we actually take advantage of the merging capabilities. So we have our base systemd file that's just a simple starting point, and then we inject sometimes upwards of 20 little specific customization files for handling things like what's the ID of the DRP endpoint? What's the user it should run under? What's the name it should use it for itself? What's it, right? All of those are specific customizations, and it helps for visualizing and saying what each element is.
So, but instead of writing a big file, you can just do it atomically, element by element. That's nice.
And it gives you capabilities that you just didn't have with Sys5 in it either. Like you can configure a service to be pinned to a particular CPU.
Yeah, that's true too.
Cool. All right. I'm thinking we only have 1:90 to wrap up on time today. This is helpful. Thank you. Next week, I was hoping to talk about out-of-band management, by the way. There's more in systemd, but I'm still this moved me much further down the field. So short of going into actually what those configuration files look like, which is possibly its own topic, but cool. Thank you. I appreciate everybody's time today. This was helpful for me. I hope I feel like I learned a lot. I don't know if everybody else did, but thank you. Appreciate it. This will be good. All right, everybody. Talk next week. Thank you.
Right
Thanks,
on.
everyone.
Wow. This is really important in how we are building and talking about systems. From an automation perspective, it is really critical for everybody who's touching infrastructure to understand these core components of how we manage and control Linux, Linux system, Linux processes, and identify things that are doing a good job and opportunities where you could be building compliance, governance, and monitoring systems on top of this type of infrastructure. I hope this was helpful. We are going to keep going deep and wide in talking about infrastructure and automation topics. Please come back, bring your questions into the Cloud 2030 TechOps discussions. You will help us make this what is ultimately a course in automation better. I'm looking forward to seeing you. You can learn more and see our whole schedule at the 2030.cloud. I'll see you there. Thank you for listening to the Cloud 2030 podcast. It is sponsored by RackN, where we are really working to build a community of people who are using and thinking about infrastructure differently, because that's what RackN does. We write software that helps put operators back in control of distributed infrastructure, really thinking about how things should be run and building software that makes that possible. If this is interesting to you, please try out the software. We would love to get your opinion and hear how you think this could transform infrastructure more broadly. Or just keep enjoying the podcast and coming to the discussions and laying out your thoughts and how you see the future unfolding. It's all part of building a better infrastructure operations community. Thank you.